I'm Misha Glennie, and I've travelled across Europe exploring the political divides the continent is facing.
You will see a fairly busy bus stop. Right above it, in massive yellow letters, it says, "When army returns to Kosovo."
Bulgaria's population is rapidly declining, and cultural frictions around migration are prominent in Austria and Germany. Is Europe facing the same political crisis it went through in the 1930s?
The European continent is at war. Are we doing what is necessary?
Continental Divides on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds is next Monday to Friday afternoon at 1:45.
On the 50th anniversary of the cult sci-fi film Zardoz, its director John Borman will be talking to Front Row this evening. And there's a live performance from The Halfway Kid. That's at 7:15 here on Radio 4. Now we're back with Sue Perkins and her panel of guests as they chase that golden minute.
Welcome to Just a Minute. Sue Perkins here, and as the minute waltz fades away, it's a joy to welcome you to Just a Minute. Now, time to introduce you to the four magnificently talented people who'll be playing Just a Minute this week. They are Giles Brandreth, Desiree Birch, Glenn Moore, and Lucy Porter. Why not cheer and go crazy for all four of them? In time-honoured fashion, I'm going to ask them all to speak on a subject that I give them without hesitation, repetition or deviation for 60 seconds. So let's see how that goes. Lucy, hello, my friend. We're going to start with you. Now, the subject for you is self-driving cars. They're here and I'm frightened of them. Can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or deviating on self-driving cars, starting now?
Self-driving cars are something I am very much looking forward to. I can't wait to polish my nails, put my feet up and read a good book, and spread a full English breakfast out on the dashboard without attracting the dirty looks I get when I do that now. I think that self-driving cars will be fabulous. Maybe they will adapt to the style of conducting passengers that their brands suggest. So a Volvo would drive very carefully and majestically, and a Ford...
Giles.
Eventually hesitation.
Yes.
Yes, I mean a little bit.
I was just trying to decide which drivers to be mean about. I was torn between BMW and Audi and I couldn't decide which way to fall.
So, Lucy did brilliantly. Giles, correct intervention. 25 seconds remaining on the clock for you with self-driving cars. Your time starts now.
In younger and happier days, I worked briefly as a fairground attendant and was responsible for the Dodgems on Broadstairs Pier. These vehicles could be described as self-driving cars. We certainly felt that that is what they were. In fact, there was an attachment that was electric and went up to the ceiling and gave you a strange experience. Many years later, when I was lucky enough briefly to drive a Tesla, I discovered the truth of what...
So well done, you're speaking as the whistle went there, Giles and Glenn.
Okay.
We are with you, my lovely. Now, your subject is sticky carpets. I'm wondering if you have any expertise in this area. Well, we shall find out. You've got 60 seconds, starting now.
Sticky carpets are a grotesque phenomenon where flooring becomes an adhesive, usually in an establishment where food is served and carpets are there. You might find them in somewhere like Wetherspoons, the pub chain that's owned by the guy who looks like a burglar by the end of Home Alone. Where they use local carpet stores to supply their ground and unique designs to showcase the local manufacturers. And what a way to sully their talents with ketchup, mayonnaise, and on Tuesdays, remnants of steak club into the fibres and fabric that we would otherwise be able to gaze upon and enjoy. Now, it's such a horrible occurrence that it became the inspiration for a punk band in the 70s who used to support the Sex Pistols called the Sticky Carpets. There were three members of the band, including Vegetable Mick on drums, Lorenzo... Yeah! Please, everyone, there's no need to stand up. Thank you. as that was my first effort, I'm going to shoot off. Is that all right?
Congratulations. You spoke as the whistle went. You got your extra point. And for such a new player of the game, it's nothing short of extraordinary. Well done, you. But we have no time to honour the good. We must steam forward. Now, Desiree.
Yes?
Your subject is Doomsday Bunkers.
I feel as though, as the American on the panel, this is being pointed directly at me.
Well, listen, I don't know what direction you're going to take this in, so it's all yours. You've got 60 seconds to tell us all about Doomsday Bunkers,
okay,
without hesitating, repeating, or deviating, and your time starts now.
Doomsday bunkers are typically subterranean structures fancied by middle-class conspiracy theorists and multi-billionaires alike, the former believing that their small arsenal of weapons and their Costco mega shop are going to save them from a government that overreaches its power, and the latter believing that the security staff...
Glenn.
Repetition of belief.
Yeah, you're right.
Indeed.
Oh, mate.
Indeed,
oh, so suddenly you're the expert now, Glenn. Cool.
Glenn's evolution in this game is shocking.
Yes.
I should imagine by the next round he'll be in my chair. Correct challenge, it was indeed a repetition. You get the subject, Glenn, which, to remind you, is Doomsday Bunkers, and you've got 35 seconds remaining on the clock, and your time starts now.
My attitude towards Doomsday Bunkers is the same as mine towards movie adaptations, which are they aren't as good as the original book. Now, I'm a huge fan of the idea of knuckling down and deciding to become a hermit and take yourself to an environment away from the rest of the world. But when people do that, usually using the mind...
No. Giles.
The gloves are off.
Yeah. Yes. Correct.
Hesitation.
Indeed it was hesitation. You shall no longer now be treated as a newbie. The brutality of this game will now unfold. It's a correct challenge, Charles. You've got 13 seconds to tell us about Doomsday Bunkers. I suspect you've been in one. We'll find out. Your time starts now.
In younger and happier days, I visited somewhere called Edgemont in South Dakota, where they have 575 of these Doomsday Bunkers. It was known as Igloo City, and it was founded in 1942 as part of the American war effort. It was extremely effective. Ooh. That's gone away. Ooh.
Giles, speaking as the whistle went, gains the point. And also, this next subject is for you, Giles. Oh, this is wonderful, Giles. This topic is the importance of a ground sheet.
What?
The importance of a ground sheet, and your time starts now.
I'd rather have a sticky carpet. Lumbered with a ground sheet, I will work with that. The one time I took part in a threesome, it must be said, there were two no-shows, but it was a very happy evening. We did this during an interval in a production of The Importance of Being Earnest, in which I played Lady Bracknell. It was al fresco, out of doors. And the importance of the ground sheet really came...
Oh, Lucy.
Okay, no, it's a wrong challenge.
Might not be.
No, it's a wrong challenge.
I mean, I was going to challenge on importance, but then, of course, that's in the title. But that is deviation, because we're...
No.
Giles, can I at least have the semblance of authority for 1 second?
What if you went on the Wikipedia page for ground sheet and it's just about Giles' threesome? Yeah.
So what your challenge was deviation?
I'm going to go deviation. I'm going to go that we're now in a world that I don't want to enter.
I mean,
you
Giles...
do. You do want to hear the full story. I'm now in Regent's Park appearing in an open-air production of The Importance of Being Earnest.
Yes, where's
and
the ground sheet?
Explain, well, the ground sheet's just coming on because I slipped as I went on because they failed to put out the ground sheet. That is the whole point, the importance of a ground sheet.
I don't know why you're talking to
Excuse me. I appeal. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Well, seeing you as of all, you've already got that out of your system, I don't see why we need to put a clock on it. Lucy, I'm giving you the point. And you can carry on. We heard the story now. We don't need to hear it again.
I would have got to the denouement.
If you just waited for me to say it sounds interesting, you've got 33 seconds. You could have said
is
all that.
Is that how long there is?
And won a point, yes.
I don't think the story would have lasted that long. Give it to her.
And this is how I have to make you understand boundaries, child. Right. Enjoying it as we were. Lucy, you've got 33 seconds. The importance of a ground sheet, starting now.
The first threesome I ever had with Giles was somewhere between Blackpool Broadstairs and Regent's Park.
Giles.
I was there. There was no ground sheet. We didn't need one.
That is true.
I think Lucy's going to tell us the importance of that ground sheet. So, Giles, your challenge was...
valid. And my challenge was that we had romantic recollections from Lucy here,
yes,
of younger and happier days,
yes,
when the pair of us went on this holiday. We started, I admit, in Blackpool, then we went via Broadstairs, ended up in Regent's Park. Yes. We didn't get to the ground sheet, that's the point. This is the importance of ground sheet. Not mentioned. Burbled on. No ground sheet.
Well, she's getting to the ground sheet now with 24 seconds remaining, Giles. So... we've heard about your side of it. So, Lucy, please...
this is very much how he was in the threesome, I'll be honest, Sue.
The time, Lucy, starts now.
The importance of a ground sheet, no matter how many of you are lying on it, is that it will protect you from bugs and cold. Another way to do...
Giles.
Hesitation.
It was hesitation. And you now can have your time to shine.
How many seconds left?
2.5 minutes, actually. It's something.
15 seconds, OK? What can you tell us that isn't about theatres, but is about the importance of a ground sheet, starting now?
When I was in the Cubs, I was a sixer, and Arkela explained to us the importance of a ground sheet. She said that if you are going camping, Giles, try to be sensible and enjoy nature. Lay out your ground sheet and then put the picnic on top of it. The pegs should be in each corner. Yeah.
And that's the end of that round. So, well, I can see the scores. We have Giles speeding out in front. Second place, we've got Glenn and then Lucy and Desiree. But it's all to play for. So, round two. And Lucy, we're back with you again. And your subject is teaching your grandmother to suck eggs. Can you speak without hesitating, repeating or deviating on teaching your grandmother to suck eggs? Your time starts now.
Teaching your grandmother to suck eggs is a very important thing to do in a cost of living crisis with an ageing population. My grandmother could suck an egg clean in 3 seconds. She and my grandfather were married for 50 years. I'll leave you to draw your own conclusions. Teaching your grandmother to suck eggs is a phrase that suggests a younger being patronising an elder. If the reverse is true, we call it gransplaining. Teaching your grandmother to suck eggs presumably originates in a time where dental hygiene was less advanced and people would lose their molars and canines at a tender point in their life and would be forced to consume dairy products in unusual ways. If indeed an egg can be considered.
Ooh.
Desiree.
I don't know if this is deviation, but an egg is not a dairy product.
Yes.
Oh.
I was just about to come to that.
The eggs are not a dairy product.
The hell fell out of my cow this morning?
It's true, so I'm going to give you the point. It was deviation. It was just a slip. Mm. Lucy, you did brilliantly. You spoke for 41 seconds. Oh. It was beautiful. That was an eloquent pageant, my friend. But, Desiree, you've got it. 19 seconds remaining on teaching your grandmother to suck eggs, starting now.
Teaching your grandmother to suck eggs is an important aspect of her training if you eventually would like to see her rise up like Rocky Balboa on the steps of the Philadelphia National Museum, like the champion that she was born to be. Swinging in that ring, your grandmother will thank you for teaching her to suck eggs because she will have the protein that is...
Wonderful. Desiree, you were speaking as the whistle went. You got the point and you get the next subject. Polite conversation between enemies.
Ooh.
Oh, this is thorny. Polite conversation between enemies. You've got 60 seconds to tell us everything you know about that, starting now.
Polite conversation between enemies is a skill to master if you would like to crush your enemies for good. Of course, you will want to come to blows and violent language. However, fisticuffs and curse words will let your nemesis know that they have won. Instead, you will have to kill them with kindness. Offer them your lunch. Offer them your husband.
Giles.
Repetition of offer.
It was a double offering, and that means you get the subject with 35 seconds remaining. So what can you tell us about polite conversation between enemies, starting now?
As Winston Churchill famously said in the House of Commons, the opposition are the members of Parliament seated on the benches facing you. The enemy are those MPs right behind you. You have to know the difference between people who are friends and people who are enemies. And consequently, when you are with those who...
Yeah, Glenn.
Sue was shaking her head quite a lot, and I went to jump onto the back of that.
Well, then there's no challenge, then.
A repetition, but you'll have to wait to find out what the word was. I believe it was friends.
No.
No.
No. No. No. No. It was actually people, but since I can't disqualify myself, let's keep going because it's such an interesting story.
So, Giles, you get to keep the subject. 20 seconds. It's a polite conversation between enemies, and your time starts now.
I was sitting at a table in the little room where people who have been elected to the.
Glenn.
Repetition of people.
Champion. Back of the net, Glenn. Is a correct challenge. Well done. And you've got the subject with just 13 seconds remaining. So what can you tell us about polite conversation between enemies starting now?
We've seen a bit of an erosion between polite conversation of enemies and non-foes.
Giles.
Well, since we're playing the game...
Well, yes, we've been trying to.
I think there was a touch of hesitation there.
Yeah. I'm inclined to agree with you. There was a touch of hesitation.
How did I blow that? 13 seconds.
Easily done. Right, Giles, back with you. Polite conversation between enemies. 6 seconds, bring it home. Time starts now.
Michael Foot, Tony Benn and I. What an extraordinary threesome it was. I haven't forgotten it. We were enemies, and yet...
Giles is speaking as the whistle went. He gets the point and he gets the next subject, which is altogether more positive. This is Little Victories. What can you tell us about Little Victories, Giles? You've got 60 seconds. I mean, you're so self-effacing, I doubt you'll even want to mention them. But should you bring yourself forward to discuss such a thing, we'd love to hear what you've got to say on Little Victories without hesitating, repeating or deviating. Any time starts now.
That's, I think, why I come here in search of Little Victories. Those moments when you triumph, pathetically, I know, by pressing your buzzer in the hope that you're going to score a point on just a minute. For me, the Little Victories today at my age are when I can manage to get the sock on without holding the bathroom door. It's an extraordinary phenomenon in the morning. I have to say, the whole day begins with Little Victories. As I look into the mirror and feel, yes, I look like my mother now, but not quite like my father when he lost his teeth. There is still some hope. These are the little victories of life. Getting to the queue and finding, yes, today I've stood in the correct line. Normally, I go to the other place and I'm humiliated because there are so many other people behind. These little victories are so splendid for me. They give me the joy, the sustenance that has made my dotage quite charming. The kind of little victory I really enjoy is when I manage to carry a glass across the table to my darling wife without spilling over the edge the water onto the floor. That, she says, is a little victory for you with your shaking hands, your tired...
The magnificent poetry of that. Giles speaking about little victories... gets to speak the entire minute, wins the extra point, and that's the end of that round. Oh. So let's check those scores again. In joint third position, we've got Desiree and Lucy. In second place, we've got Glenn. And ahead at this moment, we've got Giles Brandreth. Lucy, the next subject for you, it's, it can divide opinion, this. Ooh. It's the Brexit of herbs for me. Coriander. Ooh. Can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or deviating on the subject of coriander? And your time starts now.
Coriander is a wonderfully aromatic herb which I buy to put in curries or stir fries or salads. And then I don't have time to make those things. And instead I bung fish fingers and chips in the air fryer and the coriander turns to a black slime in the bottom of my fridge, which I lament. Coriander is also the name of a restaurant in Hatch End, a suburb of London, and it is a marvellous establishment which I go to very frequently and shall go to more now. Oh, yes.
Giles.
Oh, go to repeated.
Yes. That's all right. I got the advert in, so it's fine. That'll be free poppadoms next time.
Giles, it was a correct challenge. 27 seconds remaining on coriander. Let's hear what you've got to say on that, starting now.
Coriander is the title of one of the great lost plays of William Shakespeare. Written, we believe, in 1607, it tells of the coriander shortage in Rome in about AD 45. The hero of the play, Coriander himself, goes out looking for these little things and is murdered by his mother. It's a complex plot, and we don't know the details because, as I say, the play itself, the drama, has disappeared.
Desiree.
There was a repetition of play?
There was indeed a repetition of play. Yes, the play.
Also, there was some deviation because I don't think this play exists.
Yes. But we all agreed that it should.
I mean, for a while, I just thought, is this a long extended thing about Coriander Alanus? But then I just thought, I don't want to go there. I really don't. It was a correct challenge. 1 second remaining.
Oh.
Wow.
Well done, Desiree. You get the subject, coriander. 1 second remaining. Your time starts now.
Cilantro is a better thing to call it.
Glenn, we're with you next. A 5 second memory. Can you speak on the subject? Hang on. A 5 second memory. Can you speak on... Your time starts now.
There can surely be nothing worse or embarrassing as a human being for having a 5 second memory. We know for a fact that fish have notoriously a 7 second memory, which means that they're swimming around their tanks, trying to recall moments earlier on in that day when they had that great conversation, that comical moment in the rocks and on the stone. But fortunately, we as Homo sapiens do not usually suffer from this affliction. If it did happen to me, I would be forced to be like Guy Pearce in Memento, constantly tattooing my body reminders of things that had happened the previous day. You forgot to buy milk. You need to purchase coffee later. We have that restaurant reservation this evening. Fantastic tattoos, all of them. But it would be a...
And that's a buzz from you, Giles.
Repetition of tattoos.
Mm. See, I think it was tattoo and tattoos.
No, it was tattoos. I don't think you're remembering correctly.
With my 5 second memory. I believe he's going to tattoo himself like the film Memento and tattoos. Yeah. So, it's an incorrect challenge for once, Giles. Usually you are on it. On this occasion, nope. And Glenn, 18 seconds remaining. Your time starts now.
There was a famous case in Denver, Colorado, about 20 years ago, where a man had been born with a 15-second memory, and as a result, would say things like, I'm going to purchase some tickets to Jamaica, and we're going to get on that plane, and we're going to fly to the other side of the world and have an absolutely magnificent holiday, but then suddenly,
Well done, Glenn.
Well done.
Glenn was speaking as the whistle went, means he got the point there. Well done, you. And sadly, we've come to the final round.
Aww.
I know. But Giles, let's bring it home in style, please. We're with you and... You've got most likely to succeed. Tell us something about most likely to succeed. Your time starts now.
Most likely to succeed is a phrase that I don't often hear, sadly. My life is beset with little victories. I had hoped when I was younger and happier that maybe I would succeed. But as time went by, I realized that all I could hope for in life would be modest.
Lucy.
I'm depriving you of even this little victory because life is repetition.
Yes.
Indeed.
And I think hope was repeated too.
Oh.
This was quite a poignant subject for me.
It's a great challenge, Lucy. Well done. You get the subject. You've got 41 seconds. Most likely to succeed. Your time starts now.
I was never voted most likely to succeed at school. I was voted most likely...
Desiree.
Oh, yes.
Repetition of voting.
Correct. Yes, there was indeed a repetition. Mm. And 36 seconds. The topic is yours, starting now.
Most likely to succeed is not a thing I believed of myself when I first walked into the door today. But I figure if I can continue to talk for a bit longer, I might be likely to succeed. I think that voting in this way when people...
Charles.
Maybe a bit harsh, but there were two I thinks.
It's a little bit harsh.
Right. Yeah, it is a bit harsh.
I mean...
And given that we're talking about most likely to succeed, I think that... But you see, I'm looking for another little victory.
That is fair. He's right. He's right.
When he pleads like that, that's when I'm most minded to just ignore him. Is that wrong? And so I shall. I'm capricious like that. Desiree, you get to keep the subject. 18 seconds on most likely to succeed, and your time starts now.
Voting on a classmate's future is an insidious thing to ask a young person to do.
Mm. Lucy.
I'm so sorry, but thing has come up before.
Thing has come up. Correct challenge, Lucy. You get the topic, most likely to succeed, with 12 seconds remaining. And your time starts now.
Most likely to be...
Swift.
I really enjoyed that. Giles, you buzzed?
With a bit of hesitation there.
Wow. Terrible.
I didn't hear it.
Oh, well.
But I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Yay. How long have we got?
Yes. All right, so you've got 9 seconds, Giles. It's back with you. Most likely to succeed, and your time starts now.
The excitement is intense because there is the possibility that I might be the most likely to succeed in this round because there are only these seconds left, and I was lucky enough to be able to interrupt my beautiful friend Lucy.
Well, sadly, that is all we've got time for.
Oh.
But we've got to stop somewheres, and this is where we're going to end the game. And you all played marvellously, but as the final whistle went, here are the scores on the door. In fourth place, we've got Lucy. Desiree's just in front of her in third place. Glenn just ahead of her in second, and Giles steaming out ahead for a little victory today is the winner of the show. Congratulations, Giles. And then, my darlings, we've got to leave you. But first of all, thanks to our wonderful players of this game today. Giles Brandreth, Desiree Birch, Glenn Moore and Lucy Porter. Of course, we are indebted to Ian Messiter and Nicholas Parsons. And we also thank Sarah Nichols for blowing her whistle so delicately. The producer was Rajiv Karia, and it was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4. And this is me, Sue Perkins, saying thank you so much for listening. And please do join us again next time we play Just a Minute.
Just a Minute. We'll be back next Monday at the same time. Now, David Mitchell has something new for us this Wednesday.
On BBC iPlayer.
Where's James?
Your brother spent day in and day out at some grisly murder scene or other.
Until 3 nights ago, when he didn't come home at all.
When his twin goes missing.
James didn't just vanish. He left breadcrumbs. Coded messages.
Can a puzzle setter solve the biggest conundrum of his life?
I'm impersonating a police officer.
Yes, but he's your brother.
That's really not the legal loophole you think it is.
Starring David Mitchell and Anna Maxwell-Martin. Ludwig.
Bit awkward, really. I think I might just have solved a murder.
Start